Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Healthcare Podcast, sponsored by Michael V. Fabia and Associates. Today's interview with healthcare law and licensing attorney Michael Fabia focuses on the key purpose and functions of the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. Doctors, nurses, dentists, and similar healthcare professionals should know what to do when communicating with the IDFPR in the event of complaints and disciplinary matters. Some of the topics we'll cover on today's program are the purpose and regulatory functions of the IDFPR, as well as healthcare licensing for physicians, dentists, and nurses. We'll talk about responding to an IDFPR inquiry and what steps to take. We'll discuss IDFPR discipline and the process through which the department has several options. I'm here with Principal Attorney of the Fabia Law Firm, Michael V. Fabia, and he is a former Assistant Illinois Attorney General and the Chief Prosecutor for the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation. That's a former Chief Prosecutor, now known as the Illinois Department of Professional and Financial Regulation. Mr. Fabia is the owner of Professional Licensing Consulting Company, where he and all affiliated former prosecutors, investigators, and other professional licensing board members assist licensed professionals in their business, regulatory, and IDFPR matters. This program, by the way, is a general information program, not meant to be legal advice, does not create an attorney-client relationship, and with specific questions, you should dial 773-631-4580 to talk to attorney Mike Fabia directly. All right. By the way, as we remind people after listening to these programs, please to share this information on social media channels when you do find it, because you don't know who might be looking for exactly what we're talking about on today's program. And with further ado, let's say hello to Mike Fabia.
Yeah. Good morning, Nick. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and looking forward to talking to you a little bit about the IDFPR, what they do, and how we can work with them if we're a healthcare professional and encounter them somehow. So let's kind of start with your background working there and kind of lay out your knowledge of the department and its functions.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. So I was, as you had mentioned, I was an Assistant Attorney General of Illinois, and shortly thereafter, I was recruited to become the chief attorney and prosecutor for the Illinois Department of Financial Professional Regulations. Yeah, and it is the agency that oversees and regulates literally 200 different professionals. I mean, so, but there's subcategories. Usually, if you look at the statute, there are about 45 to 50 different statutes that are applicable in Illinois alone that apply to different types of profession. I kind of focus on the healthcare professions because I was their chief attorney there. And so I've kind of, since leaving government, I've been on the other side representing professionals, including doctors, nurses, pharmacists, dentists, veterinarians, anybody with a healthcare background. And we do other things in the other areas of IDFPR as well, but those are my focus. So the
All right,
department,
so can we,
did you ask me what,
yeah,
how it's set up, or do you want to go there next?
Yeah, please. It's just kind of the purpose and the regulatory. I'm thinking also of people who are getting into a different healthcare profession who it may be their first time encountering and understanding the department.
Okay. So, and by the way, IDFPR is an agency that's very similar to others across the country. Almost every state has something similar to the Illinois Department of Financial Professional Regulation. It may have a different name. It may use in-house attorneys like IDFPR does, or it may use actual assistant attorney generals who are assigned to that agency. And that's really how I got involved, because when I was with the Illinois Attorney General's office, I was working on cases that arose out of the Illinois Department of Professional Regulations. And then, you know, I was recruited to be their chief attorney there, in-house prosecutor. And I did that for about 10 years. So I've been doing this a long time. And since then I've been representing, as I said earlier, professionals on the other side. So I'm very aware of the agency. I'm very familiar with its procedures. I'm very familiar with its people that work there. And so I could go into some of that for you. But generally, the department was created to basically protect the health and welfare of the public. So there's two separate parts of the agency. There's a licensing and testing, and that would be somebody new that wants to become a professional in Illinois, licensed professional. So let's talk about doctors. So they're finished with their education, they do their residency, and now they're ready to become licensed in Illinois. So there's a process, forms to fill out, and the department has a division, which is in Springfield, Illinois, by the way, where they review the applications and kind of make sure everything's up to snuff, all the education required is there, and make sure there's nothing in the background and history that would cause concern for the public. And so they do screen the applications, they review them, they do a background check, criminal background check, and if something pops up, they will red flag it and sometimes initiate an intent to deny letter or notice to the professional saying that because of something in your background, we're intending to deny your license. And that's where I would come into play on these type of cases. If that were to happen, and a doctor who's trying to get licensed may call me or my firm and say, look, they red flagged my file. I had a DUI in my history, or I had some kind of problem, could be psychological, that I, was discovered or disclosed, and they need help with the process there. So we do that. We help them with the process. We help prepare them. We help explain to the department and their personnel, including the licensing boards. So they do have different boards pertaining to each profession, and we try to can convey to the board that this person is truly eligible, is not a problem, there should be no concerns, and if there are, how can we alleviate that so he or she can become a professional? So that's the licensing and testing area. The other major part of the department is the enforcement end of it. And so that includes when someone is a doctor or a professional and there's some issues that come up with the practice, and again, it could be almost anything. The statute has about 25 things listed, but those all have paragraphs, and there's other things that are so broad, unprofessional conduct or unethical conduct, that a prosecutor at the department can open up a file on almost anything that seems adverse to the profession that that particular person is involved with. And so they could open up a file there as well.
Okay, so we have licensing and testing and enforcement department. And you said right. That the purpose there is to protect the general health and welfare, basically making sure that all of our licensed healthcare professionals are the best that they can be based on our standards for the state. So when we talk about some of the health, so we have physicians, dentists, nurses, about 200 different professions. So when someone,
if you think about it, you got everyone from an acupuncturist to a veterinarian and almost every other profession in between. If you need to be licensed in Illinois, except for attorneys, because we're licensed by the Supreme Court, but everybody else is pretty much licensed under this department.
Now, how is that? Let's talk about from the consumer perspective for a second. If you are someone who, like med spas comes up sometimes with licensing of those, and people sometimes don't realize who is licensed, who's not. And talk about the website a little bit, IDFPR website, and finding that information. What should a consumer know as far as being a consumer, obtaining healthcare-related services and the licensing aspect?
Well, again, it brings up a recent case here in Illinois where it's across the country with Massage Envy. They're speaking of massage therapists, which are very similar type of a business, where there have been 200 nearly 200 allegations of improprieties by a massage therapist. So these states, and Illinois is one of them, that licenses the business itself. If the franchise owner is licensed here, would be the ones working in Illinois would be licensed through a business license, but also the therapist would be licensed under IDFPR. So if somebody had an allegation like that to a consumer, they would, of course, file a complaint with the police department because that's criminal, you know, if we're talking about sexual improprieties. But they would also and could file a complaint with IDFPR, who licenses this individual, and we, you know, putting my prosecutor's hat on, it would be assigned to me, and I would review the file and determine if I had enough to file a complaint, and if I did, we would initiate action to take away that person's license. And so oftentimes we're working together, we would be working together with the criminal agencies that are investigating so that while they're pursuing their criminal investigation and prosecution, we would be pursuing our administrative law proceedings and try to remove this person from public interaction. Does that kind of answer that? I just gave you an example of something that would have a complaint to file with IDFPR, and they do have a complaint department. So you know, if you had a complaint against a physician or you know, again, any of the 200 professions, you could file there and call there, and they would open up the file and initiate an investigation.
Mm-hmm. So with I like your example about the Massage Envy case, and I just saw something about that on television recently. In cases where, like a franchised company like that, there are multiple different states involved. As back to you wearing your prosecutor hat, and we'll dig further into that. Would you, as the prosecutor, the person you know in that role, look at you know, the different states where the individual is licensed to, or would the IDFPR sort of operate in its own area independent of anything else?
So it would often cooperate with other state agencies and criminal agencies, but they are, the IDFPR, its mission is to protect Illinois consumers and public. So our cases would be focused on pursuing claims against Illinois professionals. I mean, in this case, it would be Illinois massage therapists, people that are licensed in Illinois. Now, of course, if we took an action as a prosecutor and we were able to get some type of disciplinary order from the agency, and I could go through the specifics on that, but the department would file, you know, could file a summary suspension, could suspend or revoke that person's license. That would get reported to a national practitioners data bank, so other states would see what Illinois is doing, and vice versa. So if Illinois were not to know about this person who's licensed in Illinois, that they've done something bad in Massachusetts, for instance, there's a national practitioners data bank that collects this data from each state pertaining to professionals and hosts it on a central venue. And so each state has access to that and does get information from that. And so they would take that into consideration when they're looking at a professional also licensed here in Illinois. So again, the example I've given you is where someone might be dual licensed. And, you know, we had a case where a nurse was being investigated she was working for an insurance company. So they required her to be insured in all the states that the insurance companies were operating. So she had like 25 different licenses. So once, and this is where I was the respondent's attorney was defending her on this case. And so she and I had to deal with 25 different states who were all raising the same subject matter, but each of them were kind of approaching it a little differently depending on their statutes and their laws and their rules. So it was kind of a very big case that, you know, initially if she had only been licensed in one state, might not have been as big a deal. But because she was licensed in 25 states, each of them were taking their own action, and some of them were a little harsher than others. So it was a pretty interesting case that we worked on.
You bring up a very good point where different departments, different states, different individuals working in different jobs in those departments may
That's
have
right.
different levels of discretion and different levels of, I guess, that, you know, investigative look in their eyes. So when someone makes a complaint, and I think of law first because that's, you know, you and I both came out of that area. And in law, you know, a lot of the complaints that are filed are followed up on just because they have a duty sometimes to follow up on those. Similar to when we think of complaints in the area of childcare, people, the duties to report incidents of abuse or problems, there's mandatory reporting laws. So with IDFPR, and you said as the person wearing the prosecutor hat, you may have discretion as to go forward with a complaint or to do nothing with it. Would it be a fair statement to say that if you receive an inquiry from IDFPR, they start contacting you on the enforcement level, that this may just be a paperwork to file, cross our T's, dot our I's, because they need to investigate some of this just to follow through with it under certain areas? And I suppose in other areas, you might have someone who, you know, follows through on a lot of things, or others where if you get a notice from, you know, maybe not necessarily IDFPR, but in another state, that it may have more teeth to it. So you could be responding to a variety of different things, it would seem.
Yeah, very good insight, Nick. So you're absolutely correct. So, again, it depends on the investigator. It depends on the prosecutor. It depends on the state. But you're absolutely right. There may be, in Illinois, I'll speak specifically of Illinois because that's where I was a prosecutor. You know, so Illinois requires our investigators to investigate anything that's halfway credible. So you're right. So sometimes somebody would send a complaint in. This person, let me give you an example. In Illinois, a chiropractor has to put on there he's a DC, which is a doctor of chiropractor behind his name, or say he's a chiropractic physician. All right. But sometimes young doctors may not know or not think about it. They would just say, I'm Dr. Jones, Michael Jones, for instance, and not identify themselves as a chiropractor. So that's really technically a violation of the statute, and someone can be disciplined for that. And some people have where they believe it was intentional. But it could just be, you know, if it's a brand new doctor and they just don't know, you know, they may be called upon this issue. You know, usually it's a competitor or somebody else sees this card and goes, wait a minute, he's not an MD, he's a chiropractor, and he's not disclosing that. And so the department may get this type of inquiry and basically send a letter out, and the doctor will say, oh, geez, I didn't know. And, you know, and the prosecutor will go, okay, he's never had a problem before. I understand what his explanation is. He showed me his corrected card and letterhead. We're cool. And, you know, maybe that would be the end of it. It's just basically, oh, you know, don't do it again kind of situation. Or it could be, as I said before, you know, similar circumstance where somebody's been warned before and they're caught again the second time. And it's like, wait, you know, you're trying to deceive the public then, misrepresentation. And so the prosecutor the second time around may take a totally different stance and say, look, we're filing a formal complaint against you. And, you know, we're looking to plan your license, whether it's a reprimand, probation, or revocation, if they think it's egregious enough.
Right. Well, you know, there's like any practice of any profession, you're not held to the standard of perfection. You're held to a different standard other than, you know, no one is perfect. People make mistakes. And, you know, when you talk about just something like the business card or something
right.
like that, there are, you know, and it's not only the chiropractor who's involved there, you know, but the staff of people who may
right.
be involved
That's
in
right.
different aspects of the process. It might be, you know, putting things, you know, putting it the way his website is done, for example. You know, so there are a lot of different things there. So if one does receive an IDF PR inquiry, what should they do? Slam the door, turn the lights off, hide under the desk, go right to a lawyer? You know, what do they do?
So
what and what not to do? What not to do as well?
Yeah, this is a fair question. So going back to the card example, because, you know, that has really happened numerous times, and believe it or not, some doctors have gotten big trouble for that. So if you get an inquiry like this, I mean, you as a professional may say, look, I'm educated, I know how to respond to this, and maybe you do, but like anything else, there's the way to say something, how to say it, and kind of knowing who is making the inquiry helps to explain things. And I had a case where I represented a doctor who was called in. We met with the board, you know, his licensing board. And as much as I had told him, don't argue with the board, that doesn't work here, you know, and he came to me for advice, but he did not listen to my advice. And so he ended up digging himself a big hole in the ground and ended up with a discipline where, had he followed my instructions, I'm 99% sure he would have walked away with a slap on the hand. So I give that example because here is someone that I've advised and did not listen. So just imagine someone who just gets an inquiry or has an investigator come at his door and is now very upset. Why are you picking on me? And, you know, there's emotion involved here. I've not done anything wrong, and gets in the face of an investigator or starts arguing with a prosecutor. You haven't done yourself any good. I mean, you just haven't. That doesn't work. And oftentimes having the appropriate representation, an attorney who has experience in this particular area, will serve you very, very well. And those are just a couple examples. But I could, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've seen how terrible of a result could occur when somebody tries to represent themselves on something that initially was very minor and could have been resolved very easily. I hope that answers
your
question.
It is a good answer. And, you know, the thing that makes me think about is put your pride in your pocket. Anyone who has achieved the level of success in their professional career of being licensed in a healthcare industry, they're not an idiot. They are smart. They
That's
can
right.
respond to things. They can handle themselves. They have money. They have prestige. They have power. That said, I have heard time and time again from people I've done this program with and working with you that there are people who say, well, I'll get to them when I get to them. I will
mm-hmm.
respond to them how I will. They're a bunch of bureaucratic paper pushers, and they're not going to tell me what I can and can't do. And it's a very damaging approach to take. And it's just, I look at it as the division of labor, knowing who's in which wheelhouse, and everyone is trying to do their job. Help them do their job so they can help you get back to doing yours.
That's a good point. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. The last thing you want to do is ignore an inquiry from an agency like IDFPR, or for that matter, any governmental agency. You're absolutely correct. There's a tendency in some of us to say, hey, you know, they're just bugging, you know, they're going to go away. But they don't. They just don't go away. And if you ignore them long enough, it gets escalated to another level where maybe had you acted appropriately the first time and responded appropriately, this thing might have totally gone away. And I've seen that many times as well.
Okay, well, let's shift to the discipline options in the process. So just because there's an inquiry and a letter, I mean, you can respond to the letter, work with them, maybe have a hearing, maybe not. But if there is discipline and they're looking there, what are some of the different options that someone might face?
So let me just give you just a thumbnail kind of review of the process in Illinois, at least. So an investigator initially is assigned the file. Okay, they look at it. They do a report. Sometimes they interview people. Sometimes they collect data, collect files, depending on the nature of the, you know, complaint or allegation. And they forward it to a supervisor who then sends it over to the prosecution unit, which is run by attorneys. And then it's assigned to an attorney. And at that point, the prosecutor has some discretion. They could say, look, this is very minor. I'm just going to make a phone call. Let's make sure this particular person is not doing what we think they're doing. And maybe that's enough. Or it goes to the next level where they sent a notice of the informal conference where they're basically professional. You need to come in. You could come with your lawyer if you want, but you're going to meet with me, prosecutor, and members of your board, your licensing board, to explain these allegations that we have developed here. At this level, you really should have a lawyer, because if they're calling you in for an informal conference, even though it's called informal conference, the purpose of the informal conference is to charge you with something. And going in there unprepared and unrepresented is, again, very unwise and ends up resulting in discipline where sometimes it's not necessary, just because people are not able to represent themselves well. It's just a matter of fact. It's just, you know, professionals are very knowledgeable of what they do, but they're not always the best at explaining it to others, and especially you're explaining it to an attorney and other members of your licensing board. So that's one approach. Now, if they think, you know, once they meet with you, they can also, they have the discretion after they meet with you and you've explained what the your side of the story is, they could close the file at that point, or they could initiate a conversation to have a consent decree entered where both parties agree that, okay, there's something that went wrong here. It could be a reprimand. You're going to reprimand your license because, you know, you administered prescriptions beyond what would be acceptable under most circumstances, or, you know, if you some, I mean, we could go through a whole list of different things that could result in a reprimand, which is the lowest type of discipline, but it is a discipline and it becomes a permanent part of your record. Or it could be escalated into probation. They could put you on a probationary status. Your license is on probation. You have a bunch of bells and whistles that you have to comply with. And if you don't, they could take your license away or outright offer revocation or suspension of your license. So that's one route. And then the other route is where they think it's so serious that they're just going to file a complaint right off the bat. It's a formal complaint that is presented to an administrative law judge. And there's a whole process there on formal hearings, how that works. And I don't know if we'll have time to discuss that today, but that happens a lot. Or if a consent order is offered and an agreement cannot be reached in the informal process, a formal complaint will also usually result from that. So that's how it becomes a little escalated, and it gets sent over to a trial unit and basically presented to an administrative law judge to hear the case and rules of evidence. It's basically a trial on the evidence and certain due process protections in there, but it is a very serious venue. And then once that's all done, whatever the recommendation of the administrative law judge is to the board, it goes to the full board. They could either accept it or not, or modify it. And then the whole package goes to the director of the agency, who ultimately has veto power and makes the final decision. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, Nick.
So that's a large, lots of stuff in that nutshell. So yeah, it
there's many
the
details in between there, but I know we don't have 3 hours today, so I figured I'd kind of limit it to just the general sketch of the process.
Right. So one question, is there the appellate procedure? Let's say you go all the way up to your board and department. I suppose with your ALJ, you could have an appellate option there. I'm just thinking about the client who says, Mike, these people, this one guy doesn't like me. He's got it in for me. We were together in law school, in medical school, and this
right.
guy just wants me out of the, you know.
And that has happened and does happen. And yes, so after the administrative body has completed their process, again, the administrative hearing is concluded and the director of the agency has a finding and enters an order – you have 35 days to file an appeal with the circuit courts. And that starts a whole new process where you, you know, you would appear before a chancery judge with your petition. And again, there's a lot to this, much more than what I'm explaining. But basically, you're going to a chancery judge saying that I was not given due process at that agency because of the following reasons. You're not allowed to retry the case, the facts of the case, because those were all done and are admitted via the administrative law judge's hearing. But the appellate court will review the transcripts from that proceeding. But the appeal has to be based on, you know, an error in the application of the law, or in something, as you suggest, where there's just total, you know, unfairness or recklessness with the department that this finding cannot stand. And we've been very successful on these appeals as well. They're tough. The courts don't want to reverse administrative bodies regularly, but they do occasionally, or they'll send it back for further hearings or further discovery or something of that sort. But it is done, and we've gone all the way up to the Supreme Court on some cases. So because a person's livelihood is involved here, and sometimes you need to do that to get true justice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, one of the most important things that I think you just said, it was that your record and your facts and what's presented, once that goes through the first time, that's it. That's what they're reviewing. You don't get another stab at presenting your record and your facts. So to the extent that someone would say, well, I'm going to try to wing this on my own, and if I don't win this, then I'm going to hire someone to represent me to appeal it, you may be dead in the water, it would seem, if you've got a bad facts or a bad foundation that you laid out in the first place. Very dangerous way to proceed if people try that, and I've heard that before.
A lot of people don't understand that. They assume, well, this is just an administrative body, and, you know, I'll just, as you said, I'll wing it, I'll do the best I can, I don't want to pay a lawyer, and they end up digging a hole for themselves and coming to me afterwards and saying, can you appeal this? And I'm going, well, you're kind of stuck, whatever you said at that hearing and whatever happened there. But they twisted my words. Well, I can't change that. You know, that's why lawyers are with you at these hearings, so that you could remedy anything that you feel that's not properly questioning you, or your answer was not as clear as it should be. That's the purpose of having the lawyer there, to help make sure to facilitate that the true response is being heard by the judge and the board. And I've seen it before, you know, some very prominent doctors or other professionals, I could do this, and they end up hurting themselves. And I will tell you, I'm usually very supportive of other attorneys, but if you hire an attorney who has no clue at what the rules of evidence are pertaining to IDFPR matters or the type of cases that are involved there, you're not doing the right thing either. You know, this is self-serving, but there's a reason why some of us focus on some different types of area of laws, because we have that experience. And if you go to an attorney who, you know, basically does real estate closings or does divorce work and occasionally will represent somebody at an agency like IDFPR, and for that matter, any specialty area, and they have very limited experience in that area, yeah, they're very sharp lawyers, just like the sharp professional that we're representing. But that doesn't mean they understand that venue, nor the procedures as well as they should, nor the nuances. There's so many nuances in these agencies that, you know, not having that type of background does not serve the client well. And I really think lawyers should be more careful on the cases they take as well.
Right. Well, and I'll again, to drill that point home, administrative law for one is not administrative law for all, just because, and I know people who are highly focused in informal hearings for the Illinois, the Secretary of State driver licensing issues. That person but you move over to IDFPR. Again, a whole different set of rules and wholly different world. So, very important, and you know, we do these programs because we really want to get this information in the hands of people, and get people an idea of if you have a licensing, most time it's a happy experience with the IDFPR, and you go and maintain your license, do everything you do there. Wonderful time for people who are moving into healthcare professions, very exciting for them. But then it not be afraid of working with them and working with an attorney like Mike Fabi in case you need to cover something, because you could have the person making a complaint against you, it could be completely unfounded, but you need to go through the process appropriately, not try to fly solo, not ignore them, just follow the advice and advice and counsel of your attorney. So Mike, if people want to get in touch with you or find out more information, what's the best way for them to be in touch with you?
Well, they obviously can call me, and my office is 773, area code 631-4580, 773-631-4580. And I do have a downtown Chicago number, which is 312-609-6666. Neither one will get to me. We also have a website at fabialawfirm.com, fabialawfirm.com. And my email address is fabia@lawyer.com. So there's numerous ways to get a hold of me. My firm is dedicated to helping and advising professionals. We do free initial consultations. So you could ask me a few basic questions. I'll tell you if you're on the right track or if you need somebody. If I don't think you need anyone, I will tell you that. We're busy enough. We're not going to take cases that we're not going to be helpful on. Staff is very dedicated to this area of law. Our attorneys are all former prosecutors or somehow involved in healthcare for many years, and we have a lot of experience.
And also I want to take a moment here to kind of plug the Health Practice Advisors Networking Group. And I will say, and then Mike can talk a little bit about this, but anyone who's in healthcare, whether you need lawyers, real estate people, valuation people, all of the different things that go along with the practice. Mike, tell us a little bit about Health Practice Advisors.
Yeah, so what the reason I created that a few years ago is I was getting calls that were not necessarily legal in nature yet, okay? But for instance, a doctor just setting up a practice and just wanted consultation on what the best way to set up a practice would be, who can I talk to that would be a consultant that would come in and help me establish relationships with vendors in the field, or even tax issues, real estate tax problems where, yes, you could use a lawyer, but maybe you don't need a lawyer right off the bat, or you need somebody just to help you find a facility where you can open up a new practice. And so we have part of our professional networking group, we have experts in all these different areas in real estate, taxes, CPAs, accountants, insurance, and we kind of formed a consortium where we can help each other, help our clients. I mean, it's not like I'm necessarily making any money from the CPA that's working on setting you up in your business, but I know him and I've worked with him for many years, so I know they're going to do the right thing for you. And if you need me for any of the legal issues that may come up in setting up, let's say, a new practice or avoiding, fee splitting issues or Stark law regulations, we can help you with that as well. Kind of we created it so we could be a, one-stop shop for you for a professional in almost any area. If we don't handle it, we have colleagues that do handle it. Like, for instance, white-collar crime cases. For instance, if a professional or a practice is being charged with IRS charges or DEA or anything like that, we have criminal defense attorneys that join our team and help us handle those cases as well.
Yes, all sorts of different. It's really an interesting little universe within. Things are become so specialized in so many different professions. It blows my mind how many supporting services there are who are just narrowly tailored to you know, this specialty and practice sub area. There's so much to it.
That's right.
So anyways, Mike, I want to thank you for your time again today, and telephone number for anyone who wants to get a hold of Michael Favia, attorney at law, 773-631-4580. Mike, thank you for your time on your busy Wednesday here.
Thank you for what you do. Yeah, thank you for what you do also, Nick, because I think more consumers and professionals need to know about a lot of this, and they're just not taught this in school, and nor do they pick up on it until sometimes it's too late. So being aware of what your rights and what your, you know, what processes are out there, and having names of you know, professionals like myself who are there and could be available if you need it is always a good thing. So I appreciate what you do as well.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, like I say, it takes a village. So, okay. Well, anyways, we hope that everyone has a happy holidays. Thank you for your time. And again, if you're someone in the healthcare industry, nurse, dentist, doctor, and you find a podcast like this, share it out there on LinkedIn. Put it on your Facebook if you're on Facebook. Let other people know, because it's exciting stuff. And those of us who are in the professions who kind of have that nerd aspect to it, we like this stuff. You know, clean your desk and listen to a good podcast. So, all right. So we thank you all, and we'll be back next month with another exciting topic with Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants. Until then, Nick Augustine and Mike Favia saying, have a great day.
Have a great day. Thanks, Nick.
Yep.